Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, creating lifestyles and livelihoods of sustainable prosperity. Universe Spirit offers strategies for tackling humanity's most urgent global challenge, climate destabilization. Go to universespirit.org to find out how you can make a difference in our quest for a prosperous and sustainable future.
Welcome. It's August 4th, 2015, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Santa Cruz Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider, and we'd like to welcome you to our little cabin in the woods. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, some attempts at accessing and experiencing what is normally called spiritual experience, and as many surprises as possible, especially some of the music we have planned for you and the crazy characters that will show up often unbidden.
Our time tonight is sponsored by Go Raw, 100% raw food that not only tastes good, but is really good for you.
And we'll be back later in our program to tell you more about where you can get Go Raw. And we're excited to be here. Speaking of Go Raw food, there was a deer outside our cabin just the other day, but I got a nice picture of it.
You weren't talking about eating it, were you?
Well, I was thinking about it.
No, you were not.
I was just thinking. I was thinking about a time in history when people used to kill deer. They ate them. Still a lot of people do.
Get out of here. Well, of course they do.
Get out of here? What do you mean? What's with get out of here?
Get out of here is like saying, really? Or it's like saying, is that a fact? Well, what are you talking about? Are you pulling my leg? Really being honest? I mean, what's going on? I mean, get out of here. It stands for a lot of things. I'm from New York. I know. Get out of here.
So they say it a lot in New York.
Get out of here.
Well, we're going to be saying it a few times tonight because that's what we're going to focus on is the whole gestalt. I love that word of get out of here and what it could mean and the getting and the here and the outer.
Especially the outer as opposed to the inner.
That's right. We have the inner and the outer. And when we go into the inner, we try and access what is like the essential aspects of existence. And when we go to the outer, we get caught up in all the craziness that is our finite life.
Oh, get out of here.
Really?
You hear it a lot. Getting out of here. I know this is not the way it's meant when it's said, but getting out of here means you're going someplace else. You're leaving this moment and you're going to the next moment. You're always getting out of here. You can't not get out of here.
And yet, you're always here. As we discussed last week in our program, the irony and the paradox is we can't really escape the now, but we have the illusion that we can escape the now. But the now securely holds us into place and space. You know, I read recently that we don't come into space. We add space by virtue of our coming into existence. We bring our own space. We come equipped with space. Space is almost like comes right along with the placenta. It's our space. We actually add space to the universe by our life. And that's why the universe really can't do without us. Because once we have brought that space in that is us, we're pretty well involved in it and committed to it.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Committed to it. But what happens when you're dead? What happens to your space then?
You still evidently create space. Now, here's another concept that is really interesting that I read recently, and that is if you think of the entire cosmos and how big it is, right? It's like goes on, it's really, really big. And yet, from the point of view of all reality, it's less than 1% of everything. So what that says...
What's 1% of everything?
All finite existence, all the universes, as far as you can imagine, everything in the physical domain, the vast cosmos of space, is less than 1% of all that is.
That's a lot.
Well, it is a lot.
I mean, when you think of like all the stars and planets that you can see in the evening sky, that we're 1%, I mean, that may be too much.
What I mean is all of that stars in the cosmos and the galaxies combined is only 1% of the total existence.
Oh, get out of here.
Pretty impressive, huh? So that goes back to your question, what happens if we die? And we kind of touched on that last week because we had some friends who died. And as we speak, or at least today, about 160,000 people left the planet.
How do you know that number?
I was counting.
Get out of here. You were counting.
No, I looked it up. I wanted to know how many people die every day. And it's about that amount.
How many people are born every day?
You know, that would be something to look up for the next time.
Are more people born than die?
I think so. So, listener out there, we're so happy to have you join us in this examination of what's most catalytic in our experience, what we can expect to find if we deepen into the inner, and how we are challenged the more we engage with the outer.
Get out of here.
Yeah, so we got the inner and the outer. It's like a poem I wrote many years ago, and it goes like this. The inner God radiates. The outer God creates. I touch them both simultaneously as I spread the rays from within and am shaped from without.
That's interesting.
In what way is it interesting?
The reality that there's an inner and there's an outer. It could also be one and the same, for all we know, that we perceive it as two parts of a whole. But what if it wasn't two parts? What if it was just a whole? And there really is no inner and outer, but they're all the same. Just a question.
I'm trying to see if I could say get out of here to that, but not quite.
I could get out of here, and then you wouldn't have to answer the question.
You could indeed get out of here.
But I'm not gonna.
Well, this is good. One of the things that it's good to consider in this light is how we are with each other and in our relationships to each other, especially when there's so many relationships where they literally want their partners to get out of here and they're not being humorous about it. Get out of here. I think we need to look at that in terms of getting. We have this getting impulse. Like in the Course in Miracles, it says we have to be willing to let go of the getting concept. And that goes back to what you were saying, which has to do with if it's all the same, what's there to get?
Get out of here. Yeah, that's right. There isn't. You see, the sense of lack has to do with our involvement in the material. Because if there's a pie and I eat half of it, then it feels like there's half missing when I look at it again.
It does look like that.
Right. Instead of there's half more. There's this sense of lack that we think if we take something away, we have less. But if we take something away, there's something else.
Get out of here. The phrase, nature abhors a vacuum. I don't know if it's still true that it abhors the vacuum.
Well, I haven't heard differently, and nature but hasn't told me that it decided to love
I'm
a vacuum.
I'm still operating that it abhors a vacuum, and I want to say to nature, that's kind of a heavy judgment to abhor it, but it counseled me that it didn't mean it literally. What it meant was that it's going to rush in and fill what is actually an apparent vacuum. Because if it abhors a vacuum and it will fill it, then does the vacuum actually have time to be a vacuum? Or if it's instantly filled up, then there is no such thing as a vacuum. And yet, they create vacuum chambers for certain objects that have to operate in a vacuum. There's no air in it anyway. Light, for example, if I'm not mistaken, it operates in a vacuum.
Yeah, but that's us manipulating nature. So nature may abhor it. And nature would like to fill it up, but we're not letting it.
Get out of here. We don't let it. Did you hear that? When I hear you say that, it makes me want to travel. It makes me want to get on the road. It makes me want to go off and explore things. And then once we explore, then amazing things can happen, because even though we may take the journey on the outer and getting on down, for example, some road or some lonesome road.
Look down.
Oh.
Look down that lonesome road before you travel on. Look up and seek your maker, for Gabriel blows his horn. Some road before you travel on. Baby, look down, look down, look down, look down that lonesome road before you travel on. You better look up, hallelujah, and meet your maker before
Sammy Davis Jr. Do you know that I saw him in a live show? I mean, not a show. I mean, like cabaret on stage in Chicago. And he was dynamite.
He was electric. I saw him on Broadway in a show called Golden Boy, where he played this prize fighter. It was kind of based upon that movie with William Holden, I think, called Golden Boy. I think it was one of his first movies ever. Do y'all remember William Holden? He won the Academy Award for Stalag 17, a World War II movie about American prisoners in a German prisoner of war camp.
He was almost an institution by the time I was a teenager.
Which one?
William Holden.
Get out of here.
But Sammy Davis Jr. was magnificent. He was a brilliant entertainer.
Talk about talent.
He sang, he danced, he played instruments, he could lead a band. And he did impressions. They were right on, too. Oh, get out of here. He was so good.
But I do want to refer back. Why do we need to get on that road before Gabriel blows his horn? That always confused me about that.
Well, it's very noisy. You know, if you get on the road before he blows the horn, you won't hear it. But if you wait and he starts blowing the horn, it's very noisy.
Get out of here. That is so ridiculous. Noisy.
I know. But a horn blowing in your ear when you wake up in the morning is horrible.
All right. Okay, so let's go to another lyric. Carrying such a load. This is where I believe the spiritual or the inner aspect can really mean a lot. So I'd like to invite Rabbi Moshe Greenberg in to share a little bit about what Yeshua said about sharing the load. Rabbi.
Well, hello, Errol, Rochelle. It's always good to be here. I'm so honored that you had me on your show, and especially to talk about the load. Hey, there's a load. So many people carrying around a load. It's like it fits on their shoulders, and it pushes them down, down, down. Before you know it, they're back into the ground. That's it. You never hear from them. But Yeshua, now he said, I will share your load. He said, I will share the burden of your life. So I asked myself, what could that possibly mean, that someone could share my life, the burden? First of all, if even he existed, he's not here anymore. So what can that possibly mean, that someone who promised to share a load to make it a little lighter is able to do that? So I did some more looking, and I realized that you were talking about people bring their own space love. What happens when a person becomes perfectly synchronized, perfectly integrated with the nature and the essence of reality, so much so that it's a complete dependable part of it, and it can be everywhere at any time, in the past, in the future? So that means that even though he may have lived there, or this one lived over here, they can permeate existence and see where there's heavy loading going on and come on over and give it a hand.
Get out of here. Well, that's one explanation. I think I have another. I think I have another in the sense that it's not that they permeate from the past or whatever. It's that the reality is there is no load, and that's a misconception. And when we enter into the spiritual reality, the reality that Yeshua talked about, there is no load in that reality. There's nothing heavy, because the burden of truth is light. It's not heavy. It's only heavy in the material sense of the word. So when we enter into that which I call love and God and Yeshua, who personified that, when I enter into that space that they were in, and I entered with them, there is no heavy, there is no load.
Well, then that's the answer to the riddle.
Get out of here. What riddle?
The riddle, which was, I said there was a load, and you said there's no load. And the rabbi said there was a load, and you said there was no load. So it's a riddle. How can there be a load and not the load?
Get out of here.
No, really. It's like, it's a paradox.
First there's a load, then there's no load, then there's a load, then there's no load.
Okay, so here's an example.
Here a load, there a load, everywhere a load, load.
Everywhere a load, load. I was challenged, read the Urantia book. The Urantia book is a very much a, it's a tomb, and not as in burying a tomb, or although I've known people to bury themselves in the book. It is 2,097 pages, and it claims to be a revelation from beyond this world, and it talks about almost every aspect of life that you can imagine. But it's very much an objectified, like this is happening, that happened. It even has a chapter on calcium. It's called The Wanderer of Space. Evidently, calcium is, well, I guess it must be kind of homeless because it's always wandering around. And fortunately, it found a place in my teeth.
And my bones.
And your bones. So it's good. What I appreciated about the Urantia book was that it helps me to begin to integrate this phenomenal world, the world that I can taste, see, and especially measure, and that inner world that just abides. Now, when I got into the Course in Miracles, it basically takes the position that that's all an illusion. All that phenomenal world that you think is so real isn't real at all. To which I want to say to the Course, get out of here. As a matter of fact, when I first got into it and I read the first chapter, which said, you don't know nothing, or words to that effect, I threw the book at the wall and said, nobody tells me I don't know nothing. And instantly, I could feel the potential for a load cropping up on my shoulders. And it was the load that is pride. pride is a load. Pride is an unnecessary load. It's something we put on that basically says, I've got my shit together, and I am maybe even better then. And that's a load. That's a burden, because it deprives us of what we can behold when we're just innocently perceiving reality straight on.
Get out of here.
Yeah? You like it?
I like it because I think you're right. All of that that seems like a load or a burden is an illusion. It's stuff. We give it emotional credibility, and when it touches our emotions, it feels more real than anything else. Because we feel it, and nobody can take away my feelings. My feelings belong to me. They're real. And yet they are really an illusion.
And they're a reaction to an experience. Like in the theater, we, Rochelle and I, have both done a lot of theater as perform actors and et cetera. And a young actor might want to, for example, play an emotion like being happy or sad or mad. And one of the first things that we do in coaching someone like that is to inform them that you can't play an emotion. What you can do is pursue an objective, have an intention. And when that pursuit encounters something that, for example, may frustrate it, you get mad. So you don't play being angry. You go after what you want. And if the particular character that you're playing gets angry when it gets frustrated, other characters might do different things because it comes out of intention. And that brings us back to how we integrate with the divine trajectory.
Ah, get out of here. I knew it.
You did. You saw it coming?
I saw it coming. Well, trajectory.
As soon as I said trajectory, you knew
it was coming.
We knew it was a religious concept that was going to be forthcoming, and a scientific concept.
Get out of here.
Really?
Not exactly, but okay. How could I know that?
I guess you couldn't. But then that brings us to the question of how do we know anything? If what we behold through our senses is an illusion, and yet you would ask 99% of the people that you encountered, does it feel like an illusion? No, it feels totally real. I was just reading a biography of Wagner, and in the article it mentioned Schopenhauer, who I've always admired Schopenhauer, because he was the one that said music of all the arts is the greatest art. But he was a fatalist. You know, he believed this is it. It's basically meaningless. When you're dead, you're dead. So that raises the question. If you believe that, then what are your options? On the other hand, what does it take for your life to be meaningful, and is that important to you?
Yes, I think get out of here was perfectly okay for that moment, and then I'm going to go right on. I'm going to come back. I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to
come back. And you're
going
to come back. Well, answer the question.
What is meaningful?
Yeah, how do you arrive at meaning? What would make this conversation we're having be meaningful? It's meaningful to us, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so what makes it meaningful? Because it interests us, it seems relevant to our life and experience. It's almost like meaning is a phenomenon. Even though we access it through the mind, it feels like it's a substantive reality. Because there's on another level when we sense the meaningful, well, we do sense it as well as think it and interpret it. So I like to feel that the meaning is a kind of a juicy aspect of existence that is achieved to the degree we are able to adapt to our outer. Rochelle's looking at me like,
well,
so heady.
Well, it was heady and so convoluted that, oh my God, get out of here. Let me
think about it.
If I can reframe it. All you're talking about is meaning. What is meaningful to you? And so many different things are meaningful to so many different people. And I don't know that it's objective. I think what is meaningful to us is extraordinarily subjective. And maybe what's meaningful to the universe may be more objective, but until we reach a certain level of understanding, we can't grok that.
Get out of here.
I believe that things capture our attention. They capture our whole being, and that's what becomes meaningful to us. So a human being becomes meaningful to you because they fill your thoughts, they fill your senses, they fill every part of you, and that's meaningful. A hungry man, a meal is has meaning because he has none. So there's another thing, there's a reality of value to something, meaning to something that is rare. It has great meaning because it's rare. So there's so many different aspects to what is meaningful that I don't know that you can say one thing about it. I think it's just like it's ongoing and it's constant. What was meaningful to me as a child is not meaningful to me anymore. And what's meaningful to me now may not be meaningful to me in 10 years. I don't know.
So the content of what is meaningful changes. But I want to suggest that the phenomenon of realizing meaning, living meaning, acquiring meaning, can be found almost anywhere.
Yes.
Even in dreams.
Oh, the sun rolls down, big as a miracle, and fades from the Midwest sky. And the corn and the trees wave in the breeze as if to say goodbye. Oh, my grandfather stood right here as a younger man in 1943. And with the sweat and his tears, the rain and the years, he grew life from the soil. Oh, I'm going down to the dreaming fields, but what will be my harvest now, where every tear that falls on a memory feels like rain on the rusted plow, rain on the rusted plow. Fields they dream of wheat in the summertime, grandchildren running free, and the bales of hay at the end of the day, and the scarecrow that just scared me. Now the houses they grow like weeds in a flower bed. This morning the silo, the only way a man can live off the land these days is to buy and sell. So I'm going down to the dreaming fields, but what will be my harvest now, where every tear that falls on a memory feels like rain on the rusted plow, rain on the rusted plow, like the rain on the roof, on the porch, by the kitchen, where my grandmother sings, I can hear if I listen, running down to the end of the world. This will be
That was The Dreaming Fields, sung by Tricia Yearwood.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Talk about something, you could feel how much it meant to her, that whole experience. I thought about that when she said her grandfather or started that place in 1943, the year of my birth. And I might have even known him because I was from there too. And I didn't tell you this, but in one of my previous lifetimes, I was a scarecrow.
Get out of here. That was good, Errol.
So I've always identified with the scarecrow.
And I was the cowardly lion.
Yeah, well, or at least with Ray Bolger. Do you remember Ray Bolger as the scarecrow?
I do. I remember that movie very vividly. It came out the year I was born. But for as long as I can remember, as a young girl and then even as a young teenager, they played it on television year after year. And I think I saw it in a movie theater just once. And that was a wonderful experience.
Did it scare you? Did the witch scare you?
Oh, yeah.
She was really scary.
Oh, yeah, very
I still get scared of her when I see her. I see her on the street sometimes.
I think every woman that scares you is probably that witch.
I think so. And there have been quite a few.
Poor Margaret Hamilton. She was a wonderful actress, but she frightened a lot of young people forever.
She was so good. One thing I read this week, our good friend Hajar Gibran, who is a great-great-nephew of Khalil Gibran, and I mentioned last week that he was inspired to write a book, and I started reading it. I think it's called The Prophet Returned, and he was talking about how important our enemies are to us in terms of our growth. Very compelling, and express it in a very powerful way. And anyone that causes us stress or disturbs us that we want to push off of is essentially the enemy. And how important it is for our growth and our expansion of the space that we are to include more and more is to embrace that quote-unquote enemy.
Very difficult for most of us, because once you label something an enemy, you've given them the power to hurt you, to annihilate you even. So to become one with that, to include that annihilation in your life force, is very frightening for most people, because what we're most afraid of, the very thing that's going to happen to every one of us, which is annihilation, which is death.
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
I'm reading a book called Trafalgar, and it's kind of the backstage story behind all the incidents that happened in 1805 in that battle between the British against the combined force of the French and the Spanish. And they were very adamant about making sure you stayed on your station, and they killed you if you left.
So, and you stayed on your station, you got killed.
Exactly.
You couldn't win for losing. You couldn't lose for winning.
Unless you got lucky and one of those cannonballs missed you. But the author made an interesting statement. Since they basically had no choice, they had to stay, and they're just as likely to get killed the other way, that I don't know how he determined this, if he thought this, if there were interviews of people who shared this, but they approached it rather cheerfully then, because it was like they past that point of hoping or not hoping or fearing or not hoping. It was like, it's going to be what it's going to be, so we might as well enjoy it. And he even talked about how the captains and all the midshipmen and above, their job was to stand on the deck, and while all this firing and chaos and explosions was happening around them, and not be perturbed by it. And of course, for many of them, that was the last time they weren't perturbed in their life.
Get out of here. There's one thing that I find very painful is war. War is a vestigial part of humanity. It slowly will die out. It will die out. We will have no need for it at some point. But at this point, there's some seeming need for it. It fills something in our evolutionary consciousness that we have to have it. The domination of one species, one being over another being through war, through whatever. But there will come a time, I believe, when it will be just like that. We will not need it anymore.
In other words, war will get out of here.
War will get out of here.
Going back to this fascinating book, the Urantia book, it says, war has served its purpose, that indeed, in the evolutionary thrust, war accomplished a lot in terms of helping humans develop things like organization and communication and God knows all the chemical and physical aspects of various weaponry and strategy and tactics and socialization and all the amazing things that really war has done. And since they were all going to die anyway, especially in the past, they all died off then.
Get out of here. And nobody from the past, that far past, is alive anymore.
That's right.
No matter how they died.
So from a universe perspective, it probably doesn't make a lot of difference to any given individual what he or she dies of, other than the level of pain and discomfort he or she or we or me may experience. But in terms of evolution, in terms of the development of the species and the growing wisdom and ability of the species to get to a place where we actually are beyond war, that's pretty significant.
Get out of here.
Yeah? Well, while we're thinking about it, I've got the senator here, Senator Ted Beauregard. Did you have something to say about what we're talking about? Well, I do. As I've said more times to my constituency, you know, they try to get me out of there, my office, because some didn't believe in me and what I stood for. But as I have shared on this program before, I stand for the human party, and that means that everybody gets to come to the party, and nobody gets to be told, get out of here. In the party that you all call it evolution, call it what you want. People having a high time of it, because I think most everybody wants to feel the high of life. But as I heard once, that in order to feel the high of life, you have to drop into the low. But I think that's only a temporary kind of thing until we kind of get acclimated to the universe and we don't realize we need these contrasts to be able to understand and recognize ourselves and make distinctions and make decisions. That's the load that is lifted off by that fellow you was all talking about. Having to make those distinctions between good and bad and up and down, right and wrong and all of that. It just kind of goes away after a certain point. And that's why we're trying to put through some legislation right now to have that come back again and be able to have people not tell each other, get out of here. So it's called the get out of here law. And it means exactly the opposite of what it says. But that's our little trick.
You lost me, Senator. What do you mean it means the opposite of what it says?
Well, you know how people just naturally resist you when you put something out to them. It's just almost like a knee-jerk reaction. So when we say to somebody, get out of here, they're going to resist it. They're going to say no. And that's what you really want. You see, well, you want them to stay here with you so that you all can continue to investigate this space that y'all are sharing here.
I like that part. Investigate the space that we're sharing. There's a lot of people who I encounter a lot who poo-poo the investigative powers of the mind, when I think the investigative powers of the mind are one of the miracles of the mind, that we can investigate things, come to conclusions, look at things, create out of those conclusions. What has meaning for me is that I can investigate, that I can look for and find things that heretofore I had not seen before, that I can wake up in the morning and a thought that I never thought I could think would be present in my mind and allow me to move through the day because of it, with consciousness rather than unconsciousness. That has meaning for me, that I'm a conscious being exhibiting my consciousness daily, rather than just going rote, you know, going through the whatever of life, just like, oh, I'm doing this now, I'm doing that now. But in each moment, there's some meaning, there's some kernel of delight, deliciousness. And to find that every day, to me, is what is meaningful.
It's Father O'Malley here saying, I want to say to that, get out of here, but when I say it, it doesn't ring really true as much as it would like to be, because what I hear you saying is that you get very down close there to the here and now moment, and there's something delicious and juicy there, no matter what's going on, and even, in fact, no matter how you feel. And there was a fellow once who was like a prisoner of war way back in the Vietnam, and he was a prisoner of war for 8 years, and he was tortured terrible, and he had a terrible time, and you can imagine that. And he was interviewed later after he was released, and he was asked, did he regret the experience, or well, he wished he didn't had it. And he said, no, he was like glad he had the experience because he learned things that he just couldn't learn any other way.
Did he speak about what he learned?
I don't remember, darling, if he spoke about it. Perhaps he learned something of the lesson you were all talking about earlier, which is by loving your enemies, you're also expanding yourself. And that's just why it's so important to be here now.
Tomorrow morning, if you wake up and the sun does not appear, I will be here. If in the dark we lose sight of love, hold my hand and have no fear, 'cause
I will be here. Stephen Curtis Chapman. To me, that song is like an answer to a prayer. To know that someone is so committed to being with you no matter what. For anyone who's experienced being that kind of servant or presence in someone else's life or being served by them, it reminded me of that movie that was, I think it was with Diane Keaton. And she was taking care of Roy's room or something like that. Remember
oh,
that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it was a room.
And he was quite ill.
Right.
And she was taking care of him. Father. And then her sister was like Cameron Diaz, I think, or someone like that, who was like this wild party girl. And then Diane Keaton had terminal cancer, and she was going to be leaving. And what so distressed her was to leave him because as it is written, the more we bestow love upon someone, the more we love them. And she was so in love with him because she'd bestowed so much love. What was interesting in the movie was her sister had to make that transition to that caring space. And Diane Keaton's character had to trust her to provide that loving care when she was basically a self-absorbed, narcissistic party girl.
This song speaks about either the filial love or the eros love. And as I was listening to it, to me, the only love that will always be there, and I can always count on it, is the divine love. It may or may not be in a human being. It may be just the feeling of that, that higher feeling that that is always present to me. I can feel it. For me, it's tangible. It may not be tangible for everybody. It may just be ephemeral. But for me, it's tangible, and I know that it's always there. It's not an illusion to me. Everything else is, but that love is real and will always be there.
Get out of here.
Yep.
I'm reminded how the spirit of truth, supposedly this phenomenon that was catalyzed by the departure of Yeshua, somehow he had integrated into the circuits of the universe dynamics and was able to release a force of presence because he had pulled these two sundry extremes together, the finite and the infinite, and was able to embody the conjoining of those two realities. And so that liberated this spirit, which was called the spirit of truth, but it's also called the comforter. And I find that when I experience that presence that I feel is that assurance, I will be here, and I feel that presence, that is what that's all about. And to the degree that we open ourselves and understand that that's what's going on and that's what's available to us, proportionately, we're able to avail ourselves of that beautiful, supportive, comforting presence that is here in the now.
And I think of it as the mystery, because I think of love as a mystery, because it's not definable. It doesn't have any borders or definition like our bodies have definition. So it can invade every sense of our being as well as that which we know nothing about. It's omnipresent.
It's endless. But as they say, can't always have what you want, but you can always have what you need.
And it's true.
Yeah. you just fight fire.
Get out of here.
Get out of here is right.
You can't always get what you want, but you can get what you need. So saith the Rolling Stones. So we're looking at getting. We're looking at the illusion of getting. We've looked at this whole thing about the presence, comforting presence, the possibility of accessing this inner reality, inner, while we're caught up in the outer reality.
Discovering also that the possibility exists that they're one and the same.
Get out of here. I went for a swim once that was up in Vail, and they had this pool that was an inside-outside pool. And you could swim from inside and the outside. You went through a little short little...
I remember a pool like that. I think there was one like that in Vegas, too.
Get out of here. Could have been, but I think that's a good metaphor for what we're talking about. It's the same water, but the environment is very different.
Look at all the water on this planet. And yet, even though there's no lines, though, on maps, you know, like this water's here and that water's here, it's all really the same water. It's all salty, but it's not. Because the things underneath it change it, the vegetation changes it, the currents change it. And yet, if you picked it up and put it into a dish and water, saline water,
and don't forget, the temperature radically changes it.
Yes.
And if you didn't know any better, you might think they're not even the same thing, unless you saw them go through that transition from steam to water to ice.
Yeah.
But this is what we can discover the more we open up and allow that fictitious load to be lifted. And maybe that's why this presence that we think of as the comforter, the spirit of truth, can essentially eliminate that, because it's eliminating the illusion.
What is that?
It's eliminating the illusion that we are separate, because it takes a lot of energy to keep things apart. Remember, we used to do that exercise when we push against each other, and then if one opens up and lets go, the other falls into each other. So separation is very expensive.
Expensive. Get out of here. It's certainly energy producing.
And energy using up. At some point, as Yeshua points out, we will no longer be driven in this world by force-based energy. That the power to animate and activate and energize our lives will come more from magnetism. This is what we have.
And magnetism attracts.
That's right. It attracts and it repels. I rather think that the repelling aspect is what can drive the energy machines, in the same way that a ship, a sailing ship, can actually go into the wind and use the wind that's coming towards it, kind of as counterintuitive, to actually help it speed its way along. Not quite directly into the wind, but that's what they made tacking for. And that's why they have Tic Tacs, too.
Get out of here.
Really?
I think Tic Tacs have anything to do with it.
Well, I think they invented the Tic Tacs when they invented the tacking.
And get out of here.
Speaking of tacking, there's Tacful. And I mention that because one of the products of cultivating a life that is centered in this love, this omnipresence, is that we do become more tactful and more tolerant. So those two big T's are vital to facilitating the flow of energy amongst us in our lives, so we each can blossom and become essentially not only more real, but more fragrant. More delicious.
Get out of here.
Get out of here? Like my wife, we just celebrated our 39th wedding anniversary, and I can honestly say that you're more delicious today.
I love it. Get out of here.
And with that, we probably should be making our segue into the next moment. come back next week and have another jolly good roll at it. And perhaps the professor will be... Oh, professor, you have something to say?
I just want to say hello, good night. I'm sorry I didn't have anything more to say than just this, other than it's good to ponder. I'm always selling ponders. I hope you'll take advantage of it. Thank you for letting me say good night to everyone. Oh, what is it you always say, Rochelle, every week?
Remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it hurt more and last longer. I think that's correct.
Laugh longer and hurt more, I believe it is. Be that as it may, get out of here.
Get out of here, too.
Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for Humanity, Climate Restabilization Plan, and the Evolutionary Principles for a Sustainable Prosperity. Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.
I'm getting out of here.
I'm getting out of here.
I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to get as much as I can out of here.
I'm going to get more than that.
You can't get more than me.
Well, I can try to get more than you.
But I won't let you.
Why not?
Because I want more.
How much more do you want?
I want as much as I can get.
Well, that's too much to get.
No, it isn't.
What do you mean, no, it isn't?
It isn't too much to get. It's what you should get.
Get out of here.